Good afternoon. It is 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and you are listening to WPM Wordplay, a show for, about, and by writers about their craft. Today, we're in the studio with Sebastian Matthews, Glennis Redmond, and myself, Laura Hopekill.
As well as Dylan Flynn here as an intern. Welcome, Dylan.
Welcome. And we have a very special guest today, John Crutchfield. We have kidnapped John Crutchfield from Appalachian State and are not letting him go back to the other side of the mountain. And we're very happy to, he did not know this, by the way, but he's
wondering. You did it very subtly. The kidnapping was, yeah.
He's wondering why he's
sitting. But it's too late to turn back, huh?
That's right. We have him in the corner of the studio and we're not letting him go. I saw John perform at the Fringe Festival a couple of weeks ago, a remarkable piece that stunned me, amazed me, and enlightened me, called Caliban's Dream, based on Shakespeare's The Tempest. And also, we all had the chance to perform with John at the Black Mountain Museum Arts Center a couple of weeks ago, minus the magnificent Glennis Redmond, who wasn't there that night. But
but I was there in spirit.
Absolutely, always, everywhere in spirit. And it's that magnificent. And it was just a joy and a thrill, and I am amazed. And so looking forward to hearing more of your poems today. Welcome.
Great, thanks. Thank you. It's good to be here. Thanks, Sebastian.
Good to see you, John. Yeah. So do you want to read us a poem? Get us started?
Sure, yeah. I've got a couple things here. This first poem is called Genre, and it goes like this. My first love waves to me from across the street. It's a crowded sort of street, and she's standing in front of a frontier saloon, quite possibly the one in Destry Rides Again, where Marlene Dietrich leads other women's husbands to ruin, like poor Boris, who lost his pants. Anyways, there she is, my first love, not Marlene Dietrich, smiling and waving, her hair a sort of helmet made of platinum. Her natural color, by the way. And when I finally get there and take her shoulders in my hands, I notice her cotton blouse is held together by a safety pin. That's weird, I think. Has she fallen on hard times, or is this yet another stylish innovation I missed while working on my novel? But that was it, really. Actually, that's the end of the poem.
Yeah. Part two.
No, that really is the end.
That's good. Right.
I guess that poem kind of indicates where I am right now with my writing. I've been more and more slipping into prose, and I just don't know why that keeps happening. Maybe a spiritual crisis of some kind, a evisceration of my aesthetic quality. I don't know what's happening, but
a rebirth.
Maybe that. Yeah.
Well, read another one, and then
we'll
respond appropriately this time. Let's see how many lines is that.
Yeah, I noticed that really didn't get you guys going.
You got some laughs, though.
So here's another one. All right, we'll try this again. Not that one. This one, maybe. Yeah.
No, that one.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
This is called Poetics Made Easy. A poem is like a tree. It is like a tree with interchangeable squirrels. It is like a tree with squirrels dangling in the manner of Christmas lights, shaped like red hot chili peppers. The peppers are also tiny identical hats for the Pan-Germanic marching band, which is also in the tree, although somewhat obscured by the vast and infinitely complex system of levers, pulleys, and other simple machines used to operate the tree, which moves its arms rather slowly up and down. Limbs, I should have said. It moves its limbs up and down as if conducting an orchestra or leading a Pan-Germanic marching band to ultimate victory over the bands of the other competing tribes with their identical hats in the shape of hanged squirrels. Also, whenever the wind blows, there is a sound from inside the tree, a sound most scholars, myself included, agree is the sound of a small poem being popped open.
Excellent. Twisted.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, really twist.
And this is why I wanted you to come here.
Is this a good thing? Are you guys making fun of me? You guys are totally making fun of me,
aren't
you?
No, we're not.
No, we're embracing you.
Love it. Oh,
yeah, I feel the love.
I've decided that
I really do.
A new critical term for poetry is dang.
Is that new, though?
No.
Okay, because I've been using it from a long time ago.
I stole it from you.
Oh, did you get it? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did I use that for real?
No. Let me ask you a serious question.
Uh-oh.
No, not serious, but just... You're a theater guy. We were talking about your performance from Caliban. You write theater, you teach it, you perform it. Your poems, that these two at least, especially, are often voice driven. Do you see them kind of as monologues, or do you write them? Or when you're writing early on, can you say, oh, this is going to be a poem, or this is going to be a prose piece, or does it really matter at the beginning? Or even do those things come together, the monologue and the poem? Or,
you know, it's weird. I've actually written in lots of different kinds of ways over the years. But a lot of my poems have turned out to be, I guess, what could be dramatic monologues. But it's weird. Certain kinds of language works on the page and might even work in a poetry reading that would never really work on stage.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there really is a distinction. I mean, I guess in poetry we can talk about a dramatic monologue, but it's not necessarily the same thing as what a theater person would use as a monologue. Because in theater, a poem has to be, or a speech, rather, would have to be trying to do something, actually bring about some sort of action on some other character. And these speeches, I feel like, if they're speeches, these poems are more sort of spinning in circles.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like that epistrophe movement.
It's a good word.
It doesn't really go anywhere. Yeah, as a jazz man, you probably, right. So for me, it is about the voice, but not in the dramatic theatrical sense. Mm. Of trying to achieve some sort of action, but really just delighting in language and the sound of this weird sort of spinning in place. To me, that's interesting, and that's where my poems have gone recently. But yeah, I love the kind of mock epic voice, the absurdism.
Yeah.
To me, that's very appealing. Maybe because it's a chance to experiment with being crazy without actually having to go there in my personal life, I hope, yet.
What Salvador Dali called voluntary schizophrenia.
Right, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, with that second one, it was a perfect Mobius strip, and you don't ever see those in poems. You see them in life, you don't see them in poems, and to get that flip, it's like Jacques Prévert is my wrong Frenchman, his surrealism.
I'll take wrong Frenchman for 10 bucks.
Yeah, exactly. Name that Frenchman with the hat on.
What do you mean by that?
Jacques Prévert?
No, the perfect Mobius strip.
Yeah. Mobius strip is like, okay, if you were to take a, Escher paints the, draws the Mobius strip where it's a reality flipped over, irony? With a twist. If you were to take your belt off, this isn't going where you think.
Okay.
Oh, too bad.
And you were to hold it as a loop buckled up and then twist one side.
Yeah, and I know what it looks like, but I'm thinking about...
Oh, sorry. Why the poem is?
Yeah.
Well, he has the points of one reality set out in the first half of the poem and then reverses them in the latter half. The one tree has the lights on that look like the squirrels that look like chili peppers, and the other has chili peppers that look like squirrels. And it's just this perfect balance. You created a symmetry. And that's what drew me to John's work at the beginning. It was, reminded me of Tom Andrews' Random Symmetries and just that quick intelligence and a freedom from the personal that I find very refreshing as one who is deeply
into the personal.
Well, I've tried many years to write personal poems, to write sincerely, and I just it always sounded so terrible to me. And maybe it's just because I shy away from exposing myself, but why would I be a writer if I didn't on some level delight in that? But I could never really pull off sincerity to it in a poem in a way that really satisfied me. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to be able to express something authentic. I mean, otherwise, what's the point? It's just, you know, it's just play, which is fun, but, you know, why would anyone else want to read it necessarily?
Yeah.
So trying to find a way, to use playfulness to express something, maybe even very distantly, but something authentic on some level.
It's a good trick. I mean, it's hard to pull off. And I think maybe the symmetry is one of the ways to do it, is that there's an air of kind of joking or surrealism or kind of out there dreamlike, but there's other things going on that are balancing it, that are keeping it in a certain kind of form. I don't know.
Right. There's a space. Also, it's a way of reflecting expressing the psyche, and that's what we're supposed to do, is express the psyche. And we seem to often think that we have to reveal our personal life in order to reveal the psyche, but we don't. The psyche is its own shape.
Right.
And this is
my... It was a workshop. It was a visual artist workshop that I attended, and it was abstract. And she was saying there's no way really not to put the eye in there, even though the eye, you know, there's no way.
No, I agree with that. I agree with that completely. And I think in some ways the oblique or circuitous way is in some ways more expressive even than the direct head-on kind of confessional way.
Yeah.
I don't know why I feel that, but just speaking from my own experience, the kinds of poems I respond to often will use irony or other kinds of circumlocution very, you know, in an effective way. So,
well, why don't you read us another poem? A very sincere first-person poem about your mom.
Okay. Actually, I did bring one sincere first-person poem. Would you like to hear that?
Bring it on.
Yes.
Why the heck not, you know? Yeah. Okay, so this one's kind of old-ish, but here goes. It's called A Photograph, and yes, it is about a circus. I'm sorry, did I say that? No, it's about a photograph. Okay. There he is, his torso slightly turned, his eyes, that strange, intense blue gaze of his, bent down upon the kitten in his arms. A spotted, scruffy little thing named Ozzy, so I'm told. Where is Ozzy now, I wonder? But his arms, those beautiful, lean arms of his, those skillful hands, the hands that wedged the clay and poured the molten iron, chiseled stone and smoothed it, pieced together bits of broken wood to coax into the world the soul's own outward, open-ended, wounded shape. So much of who he was is here, so much remembered in the faintest glistenings of sweat in his clavicle's shallow notch, the nest from which his collar spreads its wings. It's summer. Ozzy's restless, feisty, wants down. And in the background, out of focus, there's a desk, a chair, a stack of crates, all awash with light poured in like milk. And there, up in the corner, a sense of trees. Beyond the frame, a room, a door, a woman with a camera, a neighborhood, a life I'll never know. There he was. The evidence is here. And I could even travel to that city, find that house, that sunlit study, even stand there, listening to the shush of leaves outside the window, watch the specks of dust jostle as if in the wake of his just leaving.
That's a nice poem. What's that called again?
It's called A Photograph.
And you said it was oldish. How long ago did you write it?
Maybe 5 years. Yeah. 5 years.
Yeah, it seems to kind of settle into his voice. I mean, maybe because we're laughing and joking, and at first the voice sounds like, oh, he's going to break into a joke, but somewhere...
But he doesn't do it.
Yeah. But by the second half of that poem is really just quiet and just something about it, yeah. Let's take a quick... Oh, go ahead.
Sure, yeah. No.
I was thinking we can take a quick break, do a calendar, or what we call a calendar. And
quasi-semi-calendar.
Exactly. Then we'll come back and we hear some more poems from our guest, John Crutchfield, and talk to him some more. Let's put on some music. Maybe. Lots of music. Thank you. You're listening to 103.5 FM, WPVM, the Progressive Voice of the Mountains. This is Wordplay, and we're here with John Crutchfield. And before we get back with him, we're going to do a quick calendar. Coming up this Sunday at 3 o'clock, we think, at the Laurel Forum at UNCA, Van Jordan, A. Van Jordan, is going to be reading, and not to be missed, a great poet with a new book about to come out, 3 o'clock on Sunday. Coming up, I think on the 25th, and the following weekend on a Saturday night, we'll talk about it next week, the Lucipo Poetry Group or Poetics Group is going to come to the Black Mountain College Museum. And Glennis?
I'll be doing a couple of readings this week, I guess for Black History Month, diversity, whatever, awareness, AB Tech at 12 o'clock, those of you who want to do a little lunchtime thing. And then also at Western Carolina on the same day, Wednesday in the evening at 9 o'clock in their university center.
Okay.
Yes.
And do you know where in the AB Tech?
No, I have no clue. But you can find it
check the
on
website.
The web,
yeah.
Google it, something like that.
Great.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. We're back with John Crutchfield.
John, it's great to have you in the studio today.
Thanks.
And I was listening to you, what you were saying about the prose, and this is probably a very selfish question because I'm really into story and place and that sort of thing. So my question to you is one pretty obvious question. It's like, what's the story behind you making your way to poetry?
You know, it's really accidental. I think probably my parents would say that I was always interested in the sound of words and rhymes and things like that, but it never occurred to me to write a poem until college, and I took a class at UNC Chapel Hill with a man named Robert Kirkpatrick, who's, alas, passed away fairly recently. I took this class on the recommendation, basically, of a friend, not with any sense whatsoever that it was going to change my life. Hmm. It was just a class that he said was good. But somehow that experience really changed the way I thought about my own experience in general. I don't know what it was, really, but I think I found that the process of writing a poem was a way of discovering what I really felt about things. For me, that was pretty revelational. Revelational is probably not even a word, but
I like
hey,
that.
You're a poet.
But it sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, revelatory in any case. Since then, I've become dependent on it in a way, just to make sense of my own experience. I think all along, probably and Sebastian was kind of suggesting this earlier in his question. I think the role of voice was always there. I look back at these poems that I wrote in college, which are terrible, terrible, you know, poems. But that interest in voice, I think, was very early. So in a way, the evolution from there into theater, I think, was very, very natural for me.
Mm-hmm. So you found theater after that class?
Yeah, yeah,
oh, cool.
Yeah, I did. And I got into acting basically because I was too poor to hire actors to act in my plays, so I had to do it myself.
You had to do it all?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's kind of the way it works.
All right. Well, all before you read us another poem, I was wondering, what are your writing habits? As far as poetry, what do you do? What does it look like in your world?
I write by hand in a notebook. I basically keep two notebooks. I have a small kind of pocket notebook that I keep with me everywhere I go.
Mm-hmm.
I've got it with me right now, actually.
And me too.
When things strike me, quotes, sometimes little bits of language I come across, I mean, I jot that stuff down and we'll come back to it. And lots of times an entire poem will emerge from the seed of some little tidbit or image or something that came to me. And then I will write that process then happens in the other notebook, but it's not till fairly late that I get on the computer, to type things up. Yeah.
One more question. Do you follow, what type of poetry? I mean, is it form or free verse or what?
I've always been really intensely interested in forms.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And most of my poems have been in forms up till this kind of recent phase when I started kind of working this vein of the Mobius strip kind of, style, and then I will sometimes write in blank verse, or sometimes I guess blank verse tetrameter, or whatever.
Just to get a little weird.
You're not going to get away with that. What?
Yeah. Okay. So blank verse is right. Never mind, you people. yeah. You don't want to hear me getting my professor voice. Okay. That just no one wants to witness that. Yeah, so I still write in forms, but not really hardcore mind-bending forms anymore, just because it's so laborious, and I feel like it was stopping me from the joy of really working this new vein that I've become interested in.
So. I was always, I mean, this is a poor excuse for not being good at forms, but I always worried that forms slowed down. You know, I know that the really masters find a way to do both, but
yeah,
like the quick mind, that fast mind that you were talking about, to write in form and to bring that quick intelligence seems like that's the trick. And it's like, how do you do that when you're struggling to catch the, you know, the beats, you know?
Well, I think the only way to do it, I mean, I think it is the result of art rather than nature, right? I mean, it doesn't come out that way.
No.
But I think if you start thinking, okay, I'm going to write a sonnet, you'll never really get the spontaneity you need. I think you get the poem out there in whatever sprawling form it comes out in, and then you compress,
you hammer, compress,
try and get it. But to make that sound natural, that's the highest art of it, I think.
Yeah. Well, read us a poem, and you know, maybe one of your failed sonnets, maybe.
Oh, I do have a failed sonnet. Hang on.
All my sonnets are failed, so.
Yeah.
I assume yours were.
Okay. Right. Well, this one fails masterfully.
Good.
So here we go. And in fact, it's called Sonnet, just in case you were wondering. That helps me keep my poems apart, actually. Okay. I once had this idea for a poem. A sonnet, actually. The sort of thing that makes exquisite ladies weep. And some of it I almost got around to writing back when I was 25 or 6 and full of sap. Yes, life was simple then. I sat around all day and read good books. Figured I'd be famous pretty soon. Although, what for was never all that clear. A sheaf of poems, maybe, or a play. I'd be a big shot, someone to admire, and yet as humble as the Buddha, say, despite the honors flocking to my name. But this the gods refused. So here I am.
Hmm. There you go.
It really was a sonnet, by the way.
I heard it, yeah.
Did you?
Okay. Yeah.
It's nice because the resolution doesn't resolve anything. You kind of love it.
Yeah. Well, there's something fake about resolutions that resolve things.
Exactly.
I mean, it's just, life just doesn't happen that way.
Right. Now, once the 17th century ended, those were gone.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know. I kind of like my world tied up in a little bow.
Yeah. A little pink bow.
That's right.
Right. With glitter.
That's nice.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, read us another one.
Okay. Sure. This is a poem called Interview, self-referentially enough, and it's actually, it's more like half of a dialogue. This is a kind of poem I've been experimenting with lately, and Laura asked me to read one of these, so here it is. Interview. Yes, I feel comfortable with ducks and other waterfowl. No, I have never set myself on fire in protest, though I have sometimes found myself burning and have had to douse myself thoroughly. In blood, sweat, and tears, what else? Only designer liquids, blood by the innocents, sweat by your brow, and tears by hot. Thank you. Yes, I'm pleased with the result. It was, however, extremely painful at the time. When I began, I thought of it as a kind of mental laxative, which didn't harm anyone except my parents and our maid, Vera. That reminds me, why was the electric company taken off public television? It was the only show that ever melted the icicles hanging from my inward parts, such that I felt slightly happy. Heraclitus, Heidegger, and Shel Silverstein. How can you ask such a stupid question? Have you ever read my work? Who are you anyway? What, you mean in bed? Yes, well, she was pretty good, I suppose. No, good is the wrong word. She was scary in a somewhat interesting way. I don't know. I never asked her. Next. It's about an experience I had in the womb. I kept seeing little swirling galaxies, all different colors. They were singing to me. It was weird. Yes, of course it was my mother's womb. Well, one day I'd like to write a book about thought. Yes, thought, you know, thinking, what people have used their brains for on occasion. Oh, and also a cookbook. You're welcome.
Thank you.
It's so
first
good.
First time someone ever referenced the electric company.
I was going to say that.
Poem.
I was going to say that. You beat me to it.
Yeah.
One of my favorite shows.
What, yeah, mine too.
Easily mine, yeah. They came out with a DVD, the best of.
No, they didn't.
Yes,
don't,
they did.
You're kidding me. Get out of here.
Best of the Electric Company.
Oh, gosh.
It's out there.
I'll get you a copy, too.
I have to get a copy.
Yeah, it's out there.
Yeah.
I was a Sesame Street girl. I always thought that the electric company was kind of violent.
Yeah.
That's how sensitive I was.
So you didn't zoom. Oh, gosh.
Oh, yeah.
Laura.
Well, Zoom was another thing, wasn't it? Zoom box 02134.
No, Zoom was a special.
You're Canadian and British. You're getting your stuff all mixed up. Right. You know what I mean?
Zoom. We're going to zoom. That was from the TV show Zoom. Zoom, yeah.
Was that
my
Zoom?
Sign? This is my sign.
Okay.
John.
Yeah. I don't know if I can help you on that one.
She's
kind
drowning.
Some kind of garbled.
I do remember Romper Room.
British
though.
Empire thing.
You do?
Yeah.
So do I.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Hey, we have that in Canada too, eh?
Oh, good.
John, we have time for one more poem.
Oh, you do? Okay.
And, yeah.
Well, I'll try this one. Self-portrait with hedgehog.
Good.
Okay. Of course.
I would say my house is somewhat empty, but it is crammed to bursting with emptiness, so much so that it can hardly be perceived at all, or else is mistaken for an accident waiting to please not happen anymore. I would say I am deathly ill, that some sort of nocturnal raptor has mistaken my ribs for a roost, and that another nocturnal raptor, possibly the first one's uncle, has mistaken my cardiac organ for a succulent young hedgehog. But as you can see, that is all nonsense, and I am in perfect health. I would say the fates have played a dirty trick on me, whereby I have been defrauded of both wife and child, but look, there they are already, arriving just now like Madonna and baby Jesus, riding a vermilion surfboard on the crest of a wave breaking steadily into the past. Likewise, I would say my friends have all disappeared, departed, forgetful, treacherous, or dead, but the truth is their laughter echoes in the bomb shelter of my unconscious with such a vengeance that I can't get a wink of sleep. They won't leave off their horsing around and hell-raising, their drinking songs, their butt-slapping and nipple-twisting, their pink bellies and atomic wedgies, their metaphysical slapstick, their vociferous weeping, their interminable hearts-to-heart in the dead of night, and I might just have to go down there in a minute here and knock some heads together.
There we go.
Thank you.
It makes me, reminds me, this morning I woke up and I went outside and there was a turkey vulture rising up from a tree. I thought, that's kind of cool. And I took a step forward and 12 more came up out of the tree. Like, fluck, fluck, fluck,
13 total?
Turkey. Yes.
Wow.
I counted them. And I was like, that's a good sign, I think. You know, I was trying to make it good.
Or
you know?
They know something you don't
know. Yeah.
Right. And they're coming back for you.
But there's something in the beginning of that poem talking about that, with the nocturnal in your chest. Yeah. What's that line?
The nocturnal raptor that mistakes my ribcage for a roost.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, amazing language.
Thanks for being with
us. Well, John,
today.
thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me. This has been fun. You guys this has been great. No, for real.
Yeah, we have a good time. Yeah. But we're really good to have you. Are you doing anything? Are you doing a play or any readings coming up? Anything that you can push?
Nothing in the near future, though. I'm working with a group of friends of mine over in Hickory on putting together a new play, which will hopefully be premiered sometime early in the summer.
Awesome.
So I'll put the word out about it.
And tell us, and we'll put it on our website blog thing and talk about it in our wonderful calendar. This is Wordplay, 103.5 FM, WPVM, the progressive voice of the mountains, and we will see you next week.
Holla.
Left there.